Good morning and welcome to the trading update call for the first 9 months of Volker Wessels. Jan de Ruiter, Jan van Rooyen and Alfred Vos are present at the other side of the line. After a short review, there will be the opportunity to ask questions. I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Jan de Ruiter.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everybody. First of all, welcome all to the Q3 update call. This morning we have announced our headline numbers over the first 9 months of this year, and Alfred, myself, and later on Jan will make a short comment on the numbers before we move over to the Q&A. We are hosting a single call this morning, which means that we have both analysts, financial journalists, and other interested people on the line. As you have read, our message this morning is a story with two sides. During the third quarter, we continue to see strong developments in the markets in which we operate. All our segments, except Dutch infra, have been able to benefit from these positive trends by either showing significant growth versus the same period last year, and that especially goes for the UK, energy and telecoms, and our construction and real estate development segments, or showing a strong performance similar to last year, which goes for Germany and North America. An important indicator is also our order book, which is at 8.9 billion euros, better filled than ever before. At the time of the second quarter results, we have announced that our Dutch infra results would come in lower and that we would seek to restore the profitability levels of this segment as soon as possible. A couple of months into the infra deep dive, we have concluded that we need to faster and deeper reposition the business in order to be able to adjust and to benefit from the changing market circumstances. As Alfred will discuss later on, we will simplify the business organization, de-risk the business, and ensure better project control going forward. And as a consequence, given these circumstances, the full year EBITDA of Dutch Infra will be in the range of 20 to 25 million euros. Still a positive contribution, but obviously less positive than we know this business can and must deliver. The temporary decline in infra is only partly offset by better performances elsewhere, which means that our full-year EBITDA is now expected to come at around to come in at around 250 million euros. And I'd like to reiterate that all our segments, so including infra, will positively contribute to our 2018 EBITDA. Despite the 5.5% lower EBITDA, we are able to announce that we expect our full-year dividend to remain unchanged, and for us, this clearly reflects the confidence in the underlying performance of our company, which overall is satisfactory. I would now like to ask Alfred to make a few comments on infra, and then obviously I'll leave the floor to you for any questions that you may have. Alfred.
Thank you, Jan. As stated earlier by Jan de Ruiter, we are going deep in our infrastructure division in terms of some repositioning measures that has to do with the fact that we concluded that by submitting price levels as part of a still continuing focus on larger projects in 17 and in the beginning of 18, where we've actually priced an appropriate amount of risk and scope into these projects, with the conclusion that that has not delivered us the hit rate on those projects as we hoped for. So with other words, the normal hit rates, you know, in the previous years between, let's say, 2005 to 2014-15 has always ranged around 1 on 4, or 1 on 5, so about a 25 to 20% hit rate. It has now declined to almost, you know, 8 out of the 10 projects that we've not been successful tendering, and this simply has to do that we have priced in a fair amount of risk to make sure that we restore profitability in those larger projects. With that conclusion, we have decided to realign, reposition our infra teams because we see that we're not being rewarded for an appropriate risk-reward tender approach. That has delivered a burden on the results within infra because we have to impair a significant amount of tender cost that we would normally be able to charge to those projects, and now we're not winning the projects. We have to take them directly into our results. Then if we look ahead in the next couple of years, we see a significant amount of projects coming on the market. So the government is spending quite a bit of funds in regional and national projects that show a better risk-reward profile than we see on the larger projects. That, by the way, doesn't mean that we're not looking at larger integrated projects. There is going to be a selection of about 20 to 30 of those projects coming on the market in the next 2 to 3 years where we definitely see potential with a better risk-reward profile. Nevertheless, the bulk of the projects that we see coming online, and those are more than 150, are ranging within a different volume range. And for that, we need a different mix of tender teams and execution teams combined with a very firm contract management, project management, but more important, a tender and contracting strategy means that we are going to implement a new simplified organizational structure that will help us win those a significant part of those projects coming forward in line with the hit rate that we've seen in the past and also in line with the profitability that we've seen in the past. Are there any questions?
Operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. For questions, star 1. Go ahead, please. First question is from Mr. Albert Pranger-Kempen. Go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. Alfred, some questions on the Dutch infra. You mentioned, I'm a bit confused, because initially you said that in 14-15 you had a hit rate of 20%, but 8 out of 10 that you miss, then you also hit 20%. So I'm a bit confused. What is the hit rate that you've seen over the last year, year and a half? Then... on top of that, this sounds a bit like a reorganization. Is there a question of that you're letting people go? And then thirdly, how much, let's say, of the approximately 10 million that you see less profitability of, how much is there of impaired tender cost and how much is related to the reorganization? Thank you.
Okay, let me take the first two questions and then I'll leave the third one to Jan van Rooyen. The number one is very clear. In the past, we've seen a success rate approximately of 1 out of 4 tenders that we implemented, we were successful on. So that's more or less 25%. Of all the tenders that we participate in, we are successful winners. In end of 2017 and part of 18, with a new approach where we've priced in, based on lessons learned, our better risk-reward approach in the tenders that were already on the way, because you have to remember that the majority of these tenders are ranging between 6 to 18 months. So at the end of these tenders, we priced in an appropriate risk-reward component, and that resulted into a hit rate that is more or less 10 to 15%. So meaning 1 out of 10 tenders where we're successful. That means that on 9 tenders, you're not successful. And on those 9 tenders, we have incurred significant tender costs, and that has to go into the result as a negative, and that is pushing on the pressure, or that's actually pressuring the results within the infrastructure business. Is also, by the way, a very clear indicator that even though we have been very successful on the quality component in those tenders, we still see competitors approaching these tenders in a different way, where we don't see with the skill set that we have that we can actually deliver these projects with the proper return. So, conclusion, not a very a sustainable business model for Volker Vessels. So that's one. The second question is related to the repositioning. It's not a reorganization, it's a repositioning. We are desperate for good people, like many other companies in the technical part of the Dutch industry. That's not only a construction problem, that is a problem in every technical niche in the Dutch economy. So it is repositioning. It is putting teams in a different spot, forming different tender teams with a different mix of experts. So it will be it will not be a reorganization as you maybe define it as letting people go. That is not in this matter related to the repositioning. So it's not a reorganization.
Yes. So on infra and the infra results, we expect our infra results to come in around 25 million euros lower on EBITDA compared to last year, as indicated. And this is a 1.4 billion euro business with essentially strong companies and strong market positions. As Alfred indicated, there will be very limited reorganization charges in the lower EBITDA number, but what we see is that we have a organization built in the past years that's focused on tendering for very large multidisciplinary integrated projects, and that organization is now in a overhead. How do you say it? Inefficiency. So that's the major cause of the lower infra results for 2018.
I think what we just now aim to do is we have taken the view there is enough work coming to the market in projects between anywhere 10 to 200 million. So more than enough work, but what we need to do is to ensure that the hit rate of the tenders that we select is going to increase, and that the cost that we spend on those tenders can actually be reimbursed over the project wins that you then realize. And that means that the overall efficiency in number of tenders participating versus number of tenders won needs to go up, and that starts with a much better and stronger selection on day one with respect to the tenders that you want to go for and the tenders that you do not want to go for. And this is all done within the overarching framework that we no longer want to accept asymmetric risk. So we are looking for a proper split of risk between the contractor on the one hand and the client on the other hand. And to that extent, and you have seen that from other construction companies as well, we are, amongst others, in very constructive discussions with Rijkswaterstaat, because nobody wins, not even the client, if you continue to have projects which obviously do not end well in time or budget.
That's very clear. Just one minor follow-up. If we then look at, let's say, approximately 27 million lower result that you expect versus last year, what is the magnitude of the lost tenders in terms of an absolute number? Is it 5, 10 million which you otherwise could have capitalized?
It's difficult to say. I think that the overall inefficiency, we haven't broken it down. So it is a combination of a number of factors. But I think it is the overall impact of the inefficiency that you create if you spend lots of people on projects that you ultimately don't do. And it is partly tender costs which you can directly add to a specific project, but it is also down to the fact that you have indirect costs which you otherwise would not have had if you had organized yourselves in a different way. And that could be all the way down to your office infrastructure, to the hiring of consultants and whatever have you. So it's a combination thereof.
Okay, thank you.
I think it's fair to say we consider this to be a isolated and temporary problem, clearly not in our plans, but something that we will deal with and that we can deal with, because we have not the problem that our underlying companies are not performing. It is the way that the infra business is basically jigged together that we need to reconfigure that a bit.
Next question is from Mr. Guido Nunez, Kepler Cheuvreux. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking the questions. First one, still on the repositioning. Infra, whether you call it a repositioning or reorganization, whether it was in the plans or not, how many costs are you going to have to take for next year in order to fulfill this? Secondly, on the increase in provision for IJmuiden, what worries me is the rising construction cost. How much headroom do you have in the assumptions of the rising construction cost going forward? Because the inputs are rising massively fast, maybe faster than we expect. Will you have to adjust your provision again if this grows faster than you expect?
Let me start on OpenA. What I've said consistently, and I realize that is not the definitive answer that everybody's looking for. We cannot predict to the last penny with another 2.5 years of construction to go whether this will be the final amount, yes or no. As in any other project, there continue to be risks. What I have said, however, is the following. We have not taken into account any pluses that may come our way going forward. We have insurance claims. We have discussions with Rijkswaterstaat on cost overruns that basically we believe are theirs. We have now taken into account what we expect that we need in order to finish the project within the extended time frame that we have communicated earlier this year. I think it's also fair to say that, and therefore we spent some time on it in our press release, that project completion is now close to 60%, probably a bit further than that. We had a couple of important milestones, as you may remember, and the milestones are, first of all, the delivery of the lock doors in Rotterdam. It is the immersion of the two caissons, the outer head and the inner head, of which the outer head has now been successfully completed at the beginning of this week. So we are definitely making progress. And as project completion increases, I think it's fair to say that OpenAI becomes more and more in control of what it still needs to do. But you can never, and that goes for every other project that any company does, give a definitive statement that this is it. The first question, what was that? Remind me.
On the reorganization?
Yeah,
correct.
This is not a reorganization in the sense that we are laying people off. As Alfred indicated, we are short of people like any other construction company in the Netherlands. Basically, what it is, it's an ineffective organization built around very large projects where there's a mismatch between the integrated project organization that we currently have and the work that we want to perform going forward. And that's something that needs to be adapted. So that's repositioning it different and organizing it different, but with basically the same people.
And therefore, if I may add, what you see if you have a massive outlier of a project like OpenAI, and this is not new, is that the financial damage is obviously one, that's very visible, but there is also sort of indirect damage in the organization because it is a problem project that has a wider impact on the rest of the organization, and that could do with the fact that you become too conservative in terms of your tender management. It could basically paralyze part of the organization because people are afraid of making mistakes. This is exactly the reason why we changed the leadership of Infra at the end of August, asked Alfred to take oversight and with a fresh pair of eyes make the necessary changes that we need to make. So this is about a reconfiguration rather than a restructuring in order to get everybody within Infra refocusing on the things that they need to do. And therefore, we are not withdrawing from the Infra market at all. We just want to make sure that the building blocks that we have, and those are all very strong building blocks, are basically put together in a way that is suitable for the market demand that we currently see coming our way.
Okay, as a follow-up on the OpenAI question, looking at the input costs for materials and labor growing so fast, I would rather say the upside risk is bigger than the downside risk in the costs. Now, how much headroom do you have in the assumptions for the acceleration of these prices that you can capture and stay within the provisions rather than to increase them?
I don't know what the exact amount of headroom is because this obviously is made up of many components, but bear in mind that if you know what you need to procure, that you may have already done so, and that therefore it is not that we are not taking into account price rises that we see happening going forward. So I think that the provision that we take right now is enough to finish the project with the knowledge that we have today. Are there still risks? Yes. Are there still opportunities, both from a financial perspective? Yes, as well. Are they going to materialize all at the same time? Probably not. What you quite often see happening in these projects is that it may deteriorate a bit further before it starts improving. And in that respect, OpenAI is no different.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Next question is from Mr. Luc van Beek, De Groof Petercam. Go ahead, please.
Yes, can you talk a bit about the timeline about the improvements you're making in the infrastructure business? I assume that the tender improvements take quite a long time before they translate into additional profits, but you also talk about better contract management and controlled execution of your projects. Can you talk a bit about how quickly you expect those to contribute?
Well, the plans that we currently have are being so the new blueprint is being implemented as we speak. We have assigned internal specialists to spearhead each one of the improvement components that we have to address within Infra. So we've actually relocated one of our best commercial directors, which is basically a contract and risk director from our UK operation that's been with us for more than 20 years. He's relocating to the Netherlands, who actually has already and is spearheading contract management and risk within Infra in a different manner. We have brought in, as we announced earlier in the fall, a COO, so Chief Operating Officer with Infra, that is taking the operational lead within that segment and supporting myself and the team in making progress in overall engineering and project management improvements. When will we start to see the benefit? Is that we will implement in the first part of 19. We will start to work on a new mix of tenders also in the first part of 19, and that is also in line with the tender channel that the government has announced earlier this year. So if you look at that channel, we see about 150 projects. So actually the good news is that there's a healthy amount of work coming to the market in the range of 10 to 150 million per project. The number of those type of projects is approximately 150 that the Dutch government, both on national, province and municipality level, is bringing to the market. In addition to that, we see about 25 projects in the range of 150 to 350 million. Within that segment, we will select the projects that have, you know, the risk reward balance that we see fit for our strategy. So if you add that together, there's actually quite a healthy mix of projects coming online. That means that we will be positioned very well to approach these projects and to bring the success rate in the tenders back to where it was. And that means that we will see in the course of 20, 21, 22, the improvements in the infrastructure as we expect them to be realized. How that's going to materialize in terms of numbers, I will leave that for my colleagues to address that, because this is all based on what we know today. And that also means that if some of these tenders slip in time, you know, this is a construction company, so it could easily slip a quarter in terms of a timing on tenders. And that means that something that might be captured for end of 19 might fall into the first quarter of 20. But if I summarize what I see in the business today, being that I actually am very pleased to see the high quality of people that we have, I see a healthy amount of work coming on the market. We have a couple of months that we need in the next two quarters to reposition the infra business, and we do that very deep and very thorough, then I'm pretty confident that we will restore profitability within a reasonable time frame.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yes, next question is from Mr. Thijs Hollestay, ING. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you, operator. Yeah, morning, gentlemen. Yeah, my question is already partly answered. So you have constructive negotiations with Rijkswaterstaat. But what is your sense? Do they understand the sense of urgency here, that the Dutch market leader is basically retreating from the biggest, most complex infra project? Because I'm monitoring this discussion for the past 15 years, and the government is always promising that they will focus more on quality and less on price, but it is basically now turned itself into a banana republic, I would say. So can you say anything about how their mood is when you discuss these items with them?
Yeah. I'm not too sure whether this is a banana republic, but I'll leave that to you, Thijs. But two comments. The first one, what we have said, and I want to reiterate that we are not saying that we are withdrawing from large multidisciplinary integrated projects. What we are saying is that those type of projects we want to undertake in a contract form which justifies the risk reward that we are looking for. To give you an example, in a DBFM, you are entirely responsible for about everything, including the financing, the maintenance, God knows what, and you have to take a view on construction, price risk, etc., maybe 2 years before you actually start to construct.
And also on planning,
yeah.
I think this is also for the listeners on the call important to know that in those contracts, you're also partially responsible for the planning of these projects. So if stakeholders in an area actually apply against implementation permits, which is completely out of scope and out of the hands of the contractor. The contractors are still responsible for the delays in the projects in relation to these projects. For us, that is simply unacceptable. That means that we will, that is absolutely no-go area for us to actually participate in these projects, because these are risks that have nothing to do with the with the design and construction of our scope. It has to do with the way the legal and planning system in this country is built up, and that's something that we're discussing with Rijkswaterstaat. These discussions are very intense. I can say that.
Yeah, and I think that to answer your second part of the question, how constructive are these discussions? In my recollection, and I'm participating, they are constructive. And I think the reason for that is very simple. There are two large DBFM projects currently in the tender phase in the market, the A15 and A9 Amstelveen. And in both projects, there are only two consortia left to compete. And in each of the two consortia, Macquarie is one of them. And the last time that I looked, there was a bank. So I think that this is also, from a Rijkswaterstaat perspective, not an ideal development. So they see what's happening. At the same time, as I mentioned this morning on the radio, there are no winners in projects that don't run smoothly. You could argue that the government gets a C-lock, which is cheaper than the actual price. But by the end of the day, this is a headache project for BAM and Volker Wessels, but clearly also for Rijkswaterstaat. And we have one of those headache projects. I guess that Rijkswaterstaat probably has more. So the industry, if you like, the participants in the industry, Rijkswaterstaat being the single biggest client, as well as the contractors who undertake these projects, all have a vested interest to find a way to get a better split of risk. And the principle there should be that risks should be managed by the party in the project who is best capable of managing that particular risk. So I'm positively, I have a positive view that we are now approaching a discussion where actually change will be made. Can I guarantee that? No. But Volker Wessels is very actively participating. I'd like to think that we even started the discussion in Rijkswaterstaat and got the industry in order to come to a playing field which is better for everybody.
Yeah, thank you for the extensive answer, and I will try to be also a more positive view on this
yeah,
as well.
Please do. Please do.
Yeah, one small final question. The 5.5 million is your part of an 11 million in total, I would say.
Correct.
In the C-log. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Next question is from Mr. Javier Pinedo, Exane. Go ahead, please.
Hi, okay. Hello, everybody. My question is also regarding the repositioning of the infra division. You mentioned, if I'm not wrong, that the new pricing approach that implies a lower hit rate was already implemented in the first half of this year. Well, so I would have expected then a slowdown in order intake, actually, in the first half, but it increased by 15%. So is there anything that I'm missing, or is there a delay or something that would lead to a decrease in the order intake in the division in the next years? Or putting the question more directly, with the market trends that you see today and with this new repositioning, what should we expect, or what do you expect in terms of order intake that you are able to reach for the next years, and what kind of margins? Would you be able to reach the 1.5 billion order intake and the 5% EBITDA margin with this new repositioning approach?
That is definitely the idea.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press star 1. For additional questions, please press star 1. Go ahead, please. We have a question from Mr. Martin Wachau, Bank of America. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. So just coming back on the C-Lock project, you mentioned that there are discussions with the banking syndicate to reschedule the financing scheme of the project. So could you perhaps update us a little bit on the funding situation? Is there perhaps any risk of delays to that project, not because of operational issues, but because of funding? And can you confirm that you are basically getting a regular prepayment on the project? Because obviously there would be perhaps some risk of working capital issues if funding is not on schedule. So if you could clarify a little bit.
John.
We are in a constructive dialogue with the banking syndicates, and currently BAM and Volker Wessels are each funding the project themselves as construction companies, as long as the project financing is not or as long as the project is not financed by the project financing banks. So we are basically financially funding the project, because we have to fund, of course, our own part of the project loss, but are also partly pre-funding the project financing itself. And that, of course, has an impact on our working capital in 2018.
I think to add to what Jan is saying, there's both BAM and Volker Wessels have now funded a significant part of the loss provision into the project. I don't think that you could argue, if you put your former banker's hat on, that the more we fund, the less risks the bank obviously are running. And therefore, I'm not surprised that it is a long discussion to get the banks back in line. We are currently answering through the lender's technical advisor quite a number of questions that the banks have asked before we will continue our conversations. The expectation is that will be done before the middle of next week, that we will meet with the banks again, and then hopefully we will be able to conclude before the end of Christmas or maybe in January. But my indications are that we will be able to resolve the discussions and that the funding will start flowing again. Ultimately, we have to put the money into the project anyway, and I think that that's what we have now done. So that obviously will have an impact on the cash conversion for Volker Wessels over 2018, but once it's done, it's done.
Thank you.
You could still press star one for questions. Go ahead, please. There are no further questions. Please continue, Mr. De Ruyter.
Okay, then if I may make a couple of concluding remarks. Bear in mind that we spoke a lot about OpenA and about infra on this call, and I obviously perfectly understand why that is the case. I just want to reiterate that the rest of the business, which is 75% of turnover, is doing well, or doing very well. We will get it right in infra. I'm happy, very happy, that we are taking the steps that we are now taking, and that Alfred is immersing himself into this business as if he were a Kessel, but it's clearly, we believe, beneficial to the business going forward. We will restore it to its original levels. That's what we have said before, both in terms of sizes, both in terms of margin, and that we will take every necessary step in order to restore the confidence. I'm fully aware of the fact that the 5.5% decline in the projected EBITDA is not what anybody on your end of the phone or anybody on this end of the phone were looking for. But at the same time, we have to be realistic that we have to make the necessary steps, which we believe are in the interest of all of Volker Wessels shareholders going forward. Having said that, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you, I think we are on the conference next week in Frankfurt, Ingrid. Yes. We are still participating in a conference in New York before Christmas, so we have ample opportunity to meet you guys. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the trading update call. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you and have a nice day.